Welcome to this AAT podcast, which will provide you with an update on the construction industry scheme. The new scheme started on Good Friday, 6th of April 2007, which is a long time ago, and it's therefore been operating for more than 18 months. Now perhaps is a good time to reflect on how the scheme is working and what are the main issues that are cropping up for AAT members and also for your clients. The Construction Industry Scheme sets out the HMRC rules for making payments to subcontractors. But most important, it is to remember that NUSIS is another tax deduction scheme. Under the scheme, a contractor has to make a deduction in certain situations when making a payment to a subcontractor under a contract relating to construction operations. Gross payment or exemption from deduction is possible and it can be obtained, and also it needs to be protected once it has been obtained. So why the need for this scheme at all? HMRC's view is that they have to deal with a transient workforce, payments in cash, and that there's been a specialised scheme since the early 1970s, with industry reports of dubious and poor business practices continuing to operate. The transient workforce was from Ireland in the 1970s and could be anywhere from Albania to Poland, Romania, etc. now in the 21st century. The important points at the outset to remember: contractors must register to operate the construction industry scheme, and they must do that before engaging the first subcontractor. Some of the current problems that we're seeing is where businesses who are deemed to be contractors in the construction industry scheme have not been registering and have not been operating the scheme. And if they've been failing to make deductions from subcontractors, HMRC may be asking them to pay for the tax they didn't deduct. So the first question, has your client registered? It is no longer compulsory for subcontractors to register for the scheme, but if they don't register, they are going to suffer higher tax deductions. So the advice to subcontractor clients has to be to register as quickly as possible. Contractors who are paying subcontractors have got to verify any new subcontractors in order to establish what their tax payment status is, and as we'll see in a moment, they have to verify them before making the first payment. And very importantly, contractors must submit to HMRC monthly CIS 300 monthly returns, providing details of all payments within the scheme in the preceding month. One of the early problems with this scheme was that some contractors thought it only applied to payments made under deduction of tax. That's not the case. All payments within the scheme have to be included on the returns. The original scheme in 1972 was introduced to combat avoidance by self-employed workers that were mainly coming from outside the UK. It was then known as the lump, and most of the workers were coming from Ireland. The scheme was designed for contractors to make deductions when paying subcontractors. Another scheme was introduced in 1999, when HMRC were getting more serious about avoidance. They introduced more secure stationery, and some of you may remember, vouchers for all payments within the scheme. Everyone had to register for the scheme, otherwise they couldn't get paid. So we had registration cards as well as exemption certificates. We had new tests for exemption certificates, the business test, the turnover test, and the compliance test, which at that time covered the previous 36 months, the previous 3 years. Guidance from HMRC, well, there's a lot of guidance on the website, www.hmrc.gov.uk/new-CIS. The new booklet, the CIS 340 booklet, is the main help. And again, which you can access from the website, the CIS fact sheets in different languages. We also have the telephone helpline, 0845 366 7899, manned by people in Bathgate and Dundee in Scotland, there to help us. But 18 months on, what are we looking at? An increase in HMRC's compliance activity, and more of this to be expected. Construction industry scheme businesses receiving special attention from HMRC. It might start with an employer compliance review, or there may be a separate CIS inspection, or it could be an employment status inspection. Whichever of them occurs, they need to be taken seriously, and perhaps advice needs to be taken and preparation made before the start. So let's understand HMRC's aims when they introduced this new scheme. They wanted to reduce administration costs through their online procedures. They wanted to improve compliance by giving us monthly returns. Monthly returns, which means that the revenue on a month-by-month basis can look at these returns, can look at what's being paid or not being paid, what tax has been deducted or not deducted. They've also introduced rolling compliance checks, and they can now much more easily change a subcontractor from being paid gross to being paid under deduction. They've said they want to help contractors get the status of their workers' rights by introducing the monthly return declaration, by providing more guidance in the form of the fact sheet CIS 349 and the employment status indicator tool that they've introduced is also there to help. The main changes that we need to look at, the verification procedure, which have replaced the registration cards and the exemption certificates, and which determine how the subcontractor is to be paid, whether to be paid gross, no deduction, whether to be paid under deduction of the 20% standard rate, or whether to suffer a 30% higher rate deduction. Contractors must submit monthly returns of all payments and deductions in the preceding tax month. And very importantly, under the new scheme, there is a requirement to submit nil returns. There are declarations on the returns, as I mentioned, for verification and status. And another problem for AAT members and others is the payment statements. Payment statements that must be provided by the contractor to any subcontractor that is paid under deduction of tax. So if they paid under deduction of the standard 20% rate or the 30% higher rate, they have got to be given a payment statement. Talk about that a little bit more in a moment. New contractors, as I've said, have to register to operate the scheme, and they should do this before engaging any subcontractors. New subcontractors should register or they will suffer the 30% higher rate deduction. We have the compliance test, which has been changed from a 36-month period to an annual 12-month period, and we've got automatic reviews carried out on every gross paid subcontractor every year. And then we have new penalties for failing to submit returns or for submitting them late, and penalties for failing to give payment statements. The new penalties are a fixed penalty of £100 per month per 50 subcontractors or part of 50. So if there are 5 subcontractors, it's a £100 penalty. 51 subcontractors, it will be £100 times 2, £200 penalty. And as many as 1,100 subcontractors, we could have a £2,200 penalty. But that is per month. And for every month up to 12 months. After 12 months, there could be an additional final penalty charge, which would be up to £3,000 if the return is still outstanding after that 12-month period. We've also got penalties of £3,000 for an incomplete or incorrect return. And that could be persons or payments omitted from the return, persons or payments incorrectly entered on the return, failing to make the declarations or incorrectly making a declaration. Potentially expensive penalties. We've also got a penalty of up to £3,000 for failing to produce records of payments, failing to give statements to subcontractors paid under deduction, and for negligently or deliberately providing incorrect information. So penalties which are going to be charged if we get it wrong. If a subcontractor that's paid gross gets it wrong, they could lose their gross payment status. We now have the scheduled review, otherwise known as the Tax Treatment Qualification Test, TTQT, applied when a subcontractor first applies for gross payment status. And also, it's applied annually for any gross payment subcontractor. Gross payment can only be satisfied if a subcontractor passes the business, turnover, and the tax treatment qualification test. In November 2007, there were 107,000 gross paid subcontractors, and at that time, HMRC started to review every one of them. I've been told that the same number, 107,000 approximately gross payment subcontractors, still exist now. 61,527 subcontractors were reviewed between November 2007 and August 2008, and 17,396 of those failed the compliance test and therefore moved from being paid gross to being paid under deduction of the 20% standard rate. The compliance test is important. It's a compliance by the business and the proprietors, so the company and the directors, all the partners in a partnership. Compliance within the 12-month period prior to the date of application for gross payment, or on a rolling basis prior to HMRC reviewing the subcontractor's gross payment status. The requirement of the compliance test is to have completed and returned all tax returns sent, to have supplied any tax information requested, and very importantly, and where a lot of businesses are getting it wrong, to have paid by the due date all the tax due from the proprietor and or the business, all personal national insurance contributions and PAYE and national insurance contributions due as an employer, and any contractor CIS deductions that should have been made. In looking at the compliance test, there are some easements. HMRC will disregard in that 12-month period three late monthly returns, but only up to 28 days late. One return that's 29 days late would fail the test. HMRC will disregard in that 12-month period three late payments of CIS or pay-as-you-earn national insurance, but only up to 14 days late. One payment that's 15 days late will mean a failure of the test. HMRC will disregard one late payment of self-assessment tax, again up to 28 days late. Any employee's end-of-year return made late, any late corporation tax payments up to 28 days late, any late self-assessment return, and then we have the old scheme, minor and technical failures, which really we can more or less ignore from now on. So let's think about making payment to our subcontractors. The first point is that the scheme only applies to self-employed workers. It doesn't apply to employees or to casual labour employees. It doesn't apply to contracts of employment. So before making the first payment, the contractor should check that any individual worker is genuinely self-employed in the work that they do for the business. Before making the first payment, the contractor must verify the subcontractor's payment status. As I've said already, the scheme is a tax deduction scheme, and we now have two rates of tax, the 20% standard rate for registered subcontractors and the 30% rate if the subcontractor either is not registered or, when he's verified, he doesn't match on the revenue system. So subcontractors have got to be verified before the first payment is made to them. Verified to decide how to pay them, whether to pay them gross, no deduction, or pay them under deduction of 20 or 30%. The advice has to be to verify when the contract or the work is agreed, not to leave it until the last moment to the day that they're meant to be paid. So obtain subcontractor details as soon as possible, making sure we've got the correct name, the unique tax reference number, a company registration number if it's a company, or a national insurance number if it's an individual. But vitally, verify the subcontractor before making that first payment. It is very important. The monthly return declaration states that every subcontractor included on this return and any continuation sheets has either been verified with HMRC or has been included in previous CIS returns in this or the two previous two tax years. So subcontractor verification is a must, it's not optional. Except, of course, there's no need to verify subcontractors that have already been paid and used in the current tax year and therefore included on a CIS return, or indeed paid in the two previous tax years. But remember, there's penalties for not verifying subcontractors. How do we do it? It's actually quite easy. A subcontractor engaged for the first time in October 2008 would have to be verified before making the first payment because they were engaged for the first time. If a subcontractor was re-engaged in October 2008 and they were last paid in October 2006, and when they were last paid, and this is before the new scheme started, they had a valid certificate. Because it's within 2 years and with a valid certificate, we wouldn't have to verify. But of course, if we had that subcontractor last used within the two-year period, but we don't know how they were paid under the new scheme because their certificate expired before the new scheme came in, we'd have to verify. And really, the message to all of our clients has to be, if in doubt, verify them. There's no penalty for verifying them more than once. How do we verify them? Well, a lot of my clients find it easier to do it by telephone. Again, it's the 0845 366 7899 number. Telephone, choose the option which allows for verification, and generally you can verify up to 10 subcontractors at one time. If you have a new site and you have 20 subcontractors being started on the site, you're going to have to telephone twice. But again, it's fairly easy. It's very important to make a note of the call. The other option is to do it on the internet. Revenue website, www.hmrc.gov.uk/newsys. You can do it using the revenue software. You can use third-party software, or for big contractors, you can use the electronic data interchange. But again, my advice is use the telephone helpline if you're having problems with online verification. HMRC will then check the subcontractor's registration. They'll tell the contractor what rate of deduction, if there is to be a deduction. If they confirm gross payment status, or if they tell us to deduct at the standard rate, we should either print a copy of the online notification if we've done it online, or we must record a note of the telephone details provided by HMRC. My advice is that if HMRC says it's a 30% deduction, we should go back to the subcontractor and check that we've got the right information. Because too often 30% has been deducted when it wasn't necessary. If 30% does come up and the information is right, perhaps it means that it's a new subcontractor. Perhaps someone who was an apprentice has become self-employed. But that should be checked out. And very importantly, we have to note the verification number because that will have to go on the monthly return if 30% is deducted. Every time the revenue will give a verification number, and that number needs to be recorded. If the subcontractor information doesn't match, the verification number will probably have a letter or two added at the end. So we might have a verification number of V00012345567, but if it doesn't match, it could then be oblique A. It's to make it a unique number for that individual subcontractor. Once we've verified them, we continue to pay them the same way, gross or 20% or 30%, until HMRC tells us differently. Very importantly, when we're making payments under deduction, we don't have to make a deduction from everything paid to the subcontractor. There's no requirement to deduct from the cost of materials, no requirement to deduct from the VAT element if there is VAT, no requirement to deduct from plant hire if it's pure plant hire, but be careful because if it's plant hire with labour, then a deduction would be required. No deduction for the cost of fuel, which is for machinery as opposed to for travel. And if the contractors pay in the Construction Industry Training Board levy, there's no deduction from that element. But what a deduction must be made from would be any payment for labour, any payment for travel and subsistence, and any payment which is a profit element. I would warn everyone now that HMRC are looking at this much more closely, and it's a real feature in the HMRC employer compliance and CIS inspections that they're carrying out. Particularly the point about the cost of materials. I all too often see that the cost of materials is shown as 50% or even as high as 90%. But does that stack up? Is it justified? On the CPD courses, I use an example. Tony invoiced £800. It says 90% materials, but there's no support in documentation or explanation. Well, the guidance from HMRC says that the contractor can ask for evidence of the cost. It says that the contractor must make a fair estimate of the cost if the subcontractor doesn't provide the evidence. And again, the guidance says the contractor must always check, if possible, that materials are not overstated. We need to warn our clients that the revenue are looking at this. They might ask for an explanation. So what would we do in a case like Tony's? Invoice, £800, 90% materials. Do we deduct 20% of the £800? Not necessarily. If we can be satisfied that materials were probably, let's make it up, probably £200, we deduct from the reasonable estimate that we would make. But just be careful. I'm aware of some contractors who are foolishly just making up a figure for materials that doesn't exist. That's stupid, and that could prove to be very costly. So what about gross payments? Well, first of all, we don't have to deduct from any payments to gross paid subcontractors. We don't have to analyse the labour and material costs. We only have to report on the return the gross payment, but excluding any VAT charge. So we record only the payment and the date made. There's no statutory requirement to issue a payment statement to the subcontractor. We should aggregate all payments made within the tax month. So, another example from the CPD course, Dave invoices £5,000 plus VAT of £875. His VAT shows us that there's materials of £2,000 and travel of £250. Well, if Dave was a new subcontractor, because he's an individual, we'd check that he was self-employed. We'd verify him, and then we'd pay him £5,875, £5,000, including the materials and travel, plus VAT. His gross paid, we don't have to deduct anything. The return will simply show a gross payment of £5,000. It doesn't show the VAT. Now, one of the sore points, one of the problem areas 18 months on, that AAT members and others are talking to me about. The rule is quite clear. Contractors must provide a written statement to every subcontractor paid under deduction, and they must provide that statement within 14 days of the end of the tax month. Okay, there's no official form which replaces the old SIS 25 voucher, but that's tough. At the end of the day, whether it's on headed note paper, whether it's on plain paper, and that's not advisable, a statement has got to be given to the subcontractor. They can be issued once a month or once a week if payments made weekly. But my advice is to issue them once a month, to issue them round about the time that the SIS 300 monthly return is being sent out, and to make a proper note of the fact that the statement has been sent to the subcontractor. A lot of subcontractors are coming back later on saying they didn't get a statement, probably because they've lost it, don't know what they did with it. It's important for our contractor clients to keep a note, a record of the fact that they've issued the statements to subcontractors. Some of you may want to keep copies, but that may involve a lot of paper. But the style of the statement to go out, the contractor can choose. You can have a look at Appendix E in the booklet SIS 340, it's got an example in there. But the key thing is, it's got to have the contractor's name and reference number and the tax month. So the last tax month, say, from the 6th of October to the 5th of November, the October return, with a statement that will be required then by the 19th of November. It's got to show the subcontractor's name, the subcontractor's unique tax reference number, and the payment details. So as my payment with Dave, if he'd been paid under deduction, it would have been £5,000, but we'd have shown the payment for materials of £2,000 separately, no deduction from that, but we would have deducted from the £3,000, including the £250 travel. It's got to show a personal verification number on the payment statement, but only if the subcontractor is paid under the 30% higher rate of deduction. We could include additional information on there, information about the VAT or indeed any other information. I think it's also important that when these payment statements are sent out to the subcontractors, they probably should have a bold heading on there of payment statement, do not destroy, tax statement, something to make it clear to the subcontractor that they need to keep them safe. Now, in terms of payment status of subcontractors, what lots of you out there will now be seeing is that the notification of changes are coming through from HMRC. I said earlier on that we had something like 17,396 that failed the compliance test and will have lost their gross payment status. So there's a lot of these notices coming out now. Because the key point is there's no more renewal application for gross payment as we used to have with exemption certificates. But gross payment status is not forever. It'll be retained until it's removed by the revenue. Very important under the new scheme, Regulation 6 requires HMRC to notify a contractor that a subcontractor's payment status has changed, and it allows a contractor to assume that gross payment or standard rate deduction continues until they've been notified. HMRC are supposed to notify the subcontractors first, although I've seen one or two cases where the subcontractor has found out from their customer, their contractor, not from the revenue. This is perhaps notifications getting lost in the post. But the subcontractors are supposed to have 90 days notice. They'll be given reasons for the change, and I'm finding that very often it's because they haven't paid the tax on time. Subcontractors can appeal against the decision, and you really should be saying to clients to consider carefully, is this a mistake by the revenue? Can we appeal? Do we want to appeal to delay the dreaded day to give us time to talk to our customers about the deductions? Contractors will be notified normally after 55 days, or it would be longer if it's after the appeal process has been completed. After they've been notified, contractors have 30 days after which they must make payments and a deduction. But contractors will not have to stop a payment run that's already in process. Okay, let's have a look at the monthly returns. Not a huge lot of problems with the monthly returns, but there are some. First of all, Regulation 4 requires a monthly return in a document or format provided by HMRC. Now, the most important point there is you can't use a substitute. You can't use a photocopy. You can't use a schedule. You've got to use the return that HMRC provides. So again, a planning point for all of you, telephone 0845 366 7899 and ask them to send you half a dozen blank monthly returns and keep them as spares in case you need it for a client, because you can't use photocopies, so always keep some spares. Contractors have got to submit monthly returns of all payments to all subcontractors within the scheme in the preceding month. Again, remember that within the scheme. I've come across quite a number of examples where there have been problems and it's turned out that the work was outside the scope of the scheme. So it's got to be within the scheme. But they have to submit returns of all the payments within the scheme, whether it's payment under deduction or payment gross. Nil returns, also very important. They've got to be submitted again within the deadline. The deadline is 14 days after the end of the tax month. So looking at a tax month of 6th of October 2008 to the 5th of November 2008, the return would have to reach or have reached HMRC by the 19th of November 2008. Returns can be done in paper or they can be done online. The paper return option will mean HMRC sending us a paper return to be received by the last day of the tax month, the 5th. It would be pre-populated with details of the subcontractors that have been shown on previous returns for the last 3 months, or any that have been newly verified in the month. Nil returns can be done by paper, but they can also be submitted by telephone. A nice easy way of phoning up to say with a nil return this month. But in doing them by paper, you have the option of checking the return box to suspend the issue of returns for 6 months. If it's not expected that any payments are going to be made, perhaps the development has come to an end. The key message I find now is If it's paper returns or online, do it early. Post paper returns by at least the 15th of the month to be sure that they will get there on time. But even doing it online, don't leave it till the last day. I would say target and try and do it by the 15th if you can. The message is avoid last-minute submissions. Now, one of the significant problems that people out there are having with the new returns is the way you cannot submit an amended return. There's no provision whatsoever submitting amended returns. HMRC guidance tells us that the contractor must telephone HMRC and give full details of the errors and the correct figures. The telephone number, not surprisingly, is 0845 366 7899. If you do have to telephone and amend a return, please be sure that you make a record of the call for future reference. I actually note the date, the time of day, and the nature of the changes. That's very important because the revenue may amend their records, but the amendment won't show up on the online returns, and you'll need the details of the amendments to get the end of year P35 right. If a subcontractor is underpaid in 1 month, that's not an error in the return. The balance will be paid the next month, and the balance will be shown on the return for the next month. No call would be required at all. If a subcontractor is overpaid in 1 month, and the balance can be recovered the following month, again, no call is required. The adjustment can be made without changing the returns. If a subcontractor is overpaid and is not due to receive any more payments, well, the contractor has to recover the net amount, the amount after tax, which he paid to the subcontractor, and then tell HMRC. If payments have been omitted from a return, HMRC tell us to telephone and notify the correct amounts. And again, if incorrect entries are reported, such as, say, £5,600, which should have been reported as £6,500, again, we can telephone 0845 366 7899, tell them the change, but make sure you make a record of the changes and of the call that you made. Very important, of course, the return includes an employment status declaration which has to be completed every month. What does it say? It says the employment status of each individual included on this return and any continuation sheets has been considered and payments have not been made under contracts of employment. Of course, getting the status of subcontractor workers right was and is one of the revenue's main stated aims. I've mentioned already, they've issued a new fact sheet, CIS 349, which gives some guidelines. HMRC has also the Employment Status Indicator tool, which many of you appear reluctant to use. But let's have a little look at this employment status issue. Revenue mainly targeting labour-only individual subcontractors. It's a fact that they're actively pursuing liabilities for past years, and I know that because I've been involved in quite a number of cases over the last 18 months. It's also a fact that getting it wrong could prove very costly. The revenue guidance makes it clear that contractors are responsible for determining the employment status of their workers, and it will be no excuse to say that they are registered subcontractors with HMRC, because they could be self-employed working for one contractor, where there is little control and a lot of risk, and yet be employed earners working for another subcontractor who perhaps pays them in a different way, provides them with a company van and all the tools and materials and what have you. The potential cost to a contractor getting it wrong is substantial. The difference in national insurance alone in 2008-09, for someone earning £770 a week, would be £5,500, and that doesn't take into account the tax, which the revenue might also try and recover from the contractor who is held to be the employer. This podcast isn't about employment status, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but just a few reminders. There's no legal definition of self-employment. Decisions are always based on the facts we're told by the revenue, and the facts can differ widely. In the construction industry, there are lots of arguments about wet days, stand-down days, which puts the subcontractors genuinely at risk of not getting paid. We need to be aware of that. We need to establish that. We need to prove that, if that is the case, as an indicator that the subcontractor is at risk and is self-employed. In contrast, if the subcontractor is paid the same amount of money every week or every day, whether they're working or not, whatever they're doing, they're more likely to be employees, and perhaps the contractor should be thinking about putting them on the payroll. The issues that the revenue will look at will tend to be the level of control. And in the construction industry, control is often not purely a matter of the contractor telling a subcontractor what to do and when to do it. There may be only one place, the site where the work is done. And the site programme or the programme of works of the main contractor may determine when the work is done. So control is an element to look at. It may not necessarily be that conclusive. A few points on things like equipment, materials and tools. It's very easy to say when a subcontractor is investing a lot of his own money in equipment and tools that he's clearly self-employed, whereas the revenue will argue if the skilled craftsman is just using the normal hand tools, it doesn't matter who supplies them. On materials, a lot of the big contractors are not going to allow supply and fix and the subcontractors to provide the materials because of cost and quality issues. But again, it needs looking at. Does the subcontractor provide any of the materials, tools, or does the contractor pay for everything, including the duffel coat, the jeans, and the jackets? In which case, I would say they're an employee. In summary, then, the new construction scheme has worked better than its predecessor. Less administration as the revenue aimed, but still, I think, some problems. The common failures for AAT members to be reminded of, the failure to register for the scheme. Contractors perhaps working for a private householder, but then making payments for construction operations, for construction work, to subcontractor workers, where they should have deducted tax on the payments to the subcontractors. That's caused a problem for a number of AAT members, and I think you need to be aware of it. Other problems, late returns. Get them in on time. Remember my suggested 15th of the month target date for paper returns and for online returns. Incomplete or incorrect returns, missing payments, payments that shouldn't be there, omitted travel and subsistence payments, and the thorny subject of the overstated cost of materials. Check that out. The failure to issue payment statements to subcontractors paid under deduction. That's another problem which really needs to be addressed. I would also like to think about reviewing procedures for engaging new subcontractors. Perhaps introducing or updating a contract for services or an engagement letter. Providing clients with at least a basic checklist to identify subcontractors that are at risk. Applying checks to every engagement of an individual subcontractor. And using the checklist when subcontractors are re-engaged after a period of time. We should review and update the database of engaged subcontractors. We should review and record notices of change in payment status and ensure that they're being correctly dealt with to avoid suffering from an under-deduction of tax. If in doubt, it is very, very important to verify the subcontractor before payment. We need to monitor procedures for submitting monthly returns, including nil returns, and for notifying HMRC of the need to remove the nil return indicator if we've asked them to suspend returns for 6 months. We need to review the requirements of the compliance test, the payment procedures to ensure payments are made on time, the monthly return procedures to ensure that returns are submitted on time. We need perhaps at least annual reminders to directors about their own tax affairs needing to be up to date. So let's avoid falling foul of the compliance test. Let's avoid risking gross payment status being taken away. And let's avoid the costly penalties. Thank you.